Today, we find ourselves in America, where anything can happen. From your dreams coming true, to your nightmares becoming real. This is American Crimes.
Is 40 an arbitrary number?
40 is an estimate. I gave a number between 30 and 40. I think I have identified, most of them.
Look, you pled guilty to murder. But you don't use that word.
I think that I had a lot of trouble accepting that word for a long time.
For 16 years, Charles Cullen worked as a nurse in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. By 2003, he had a perfect attendance, and he worked at 9 different hospitals, making $28 an hour. He was eventually dubbed the Angel of Death, and at that point he was living a comfortable life while committing horrible crimes. He was born in West Orange, New Jersey, to a pair of Irish Catholic parents who, by all accounts, could not afford another child. He had 6 other siblings, and they had all but grown up and left the house, and not long after he was born, his father died as well. He was then raised in a home occupied by the fleeting visits of drug-addicted brothers and the desperate return of pregnant, aimless sisters. Each of them brought unfamiliar and sometimes violent men inside the Cullens' home. Charlie did not know safety then. He knew pain. His mother was the only thing vaguely protecting him from the wickedness of his environment. He became desperate for her love, addicted to the maternal shield, in the same way his siblings were addicted to the pipes or needles. Unfortunately, she was killed in a car crash during Charlie's senior year of high school, and he never forgave the hospital for cremating her. So it seems as if Charlie grew up in this house full of people well after he was comfortable with it being just him and his mom. I don't know how many years were there when it was just them. But it does eventually sound like the brothers and sisters start coming back because life has dealt them a pretty shitty hand. So now they're back and more kids are coming, grandkids are coming because the sisters are being pregnant. I'm sure there's a financial strain. Plus, as I said, the random men, just random people coming into the house, being friends of the brother and sisters or the mom, and then, you know, she was his only protection for so long, and then she's taken away in a car crash when he's a senior in high school. So a very vital time. He's 18. You know, he's about to take on the world, and now he essentially has nobody because his brothers and sisters are either drug addicts or completely aimless, and they can't help themselves. So, of course, that's going to add stress. That's going to make life a little twisted for you, make you probably feel a lot like the brothers and sisters, and where you're like, well, I might as well just start doing drugs, or I should get pregnant. No, he's a boy. But you get what I'm saying, where it's like, just throw it away. Who cares now? Who cares? Mom and dad are both gone, and I'm surrounded by nothing but horrible things in this environment. Might as well succumb to it. Eventually, you will become a product of your environment. But here's the thing. As we just heard at the top of the show, an actual quote from him. It's a 60-minute interview, and Charlie Cullen is saying he has killed approximately 35, 40 people. So that this is early in the episode that I'm telling you guys this, but you could assume this is American Crimes. But here's the thing. What I've already mentioned about the family doesn't necessarily create a killer. Losing the mom and dad, having brothers and sisters that are just bad people. So there has to be more, right? You could assume now that there has to be more. More things have to take place in little Charlie's life for him to eventually take so many lives. But what exactly were those things? He tried to kill himself after that. It wasn't the first time. He'd been trying since he was 9 years old. Charlie failed as he always had, and he would continue to fail for the rest of his adult life. Instead, Cullen decided to go to the Navy. But he also failed there. By 1984, Charles had returned to New Jersey. In March of that year, he was the only male student in the Mountainside Hospital School of Nursing. He was a natural, he was respected by his peers, where he was soon elected the president of his class. In the meantime, Cullen worked wherever he could to pay his way through nursing school. He does eventually meet Adrian Baum at the Roy Rogers restaurant in West Orange. She was fresh out of college and plainly ambitious. So in 1984, he's the only one, the only male nurse going to the school. He's also been trying to kill himself since he was 9 years old. He's lost both of his parents. It just, I mean, he's obviously messed up. You know, there's a lot of things going on upstairs that aren't super visible to everybody else. I mean, he meets this woman, and she's fresh out of college. She's got the same sort of ambition for things like Charlie does. She's a new caliber of woman to him because he had only known of his mom and sisters who were aimless. She was someone who might actually match the tenacity that he had applied in his nursing career. So he really wanted to be with Adrian. Adrian? Yeah, I'll say Adrian. She was constantly being showered with gifts from Charlie. He was holding down three jobs at the time and notably excelled at the Mountainside Nursing School. Adrian would have been pressed to find someone else who had adored her as much as Charles did. They were engaged just 6 months later and married the week after Charles graduated. Charles and Adrian Cullen returned from their honeymoon a day early. Charlie was determined to start his new career at the St. Barnabas Medical Center as soon as possible. So he definitely has a lot of issues going on. He's went through a lot of stuff, but as you can see, there's still a certain ambition in him where, yeah, he had bouts of suicide, but he's still ambitious enough to say, if I'm going to live, I'm going to live better than anybody else I've seen around me and the things that I've grown accustomed to. I'm going to have a better life than that. And that's great. That's amazing. That's the stories you want to hear. You want to hear of somebody who is like, hey man, my home life, my childhood life wasn't great, so I dedicated myself to doing better than anything that I had seen growing up. Those are good stories. But as you know, as uplifting as that can be, this is American Crimes, and we're talking about a bad guy. This is not a good guy. No one knew that it would be in the St. Barnabas burn unit where the Angel of Death first stretched his wings. In 1987, St. Barnabas was the home of the only certified burn unit in all of New Jersey. New patients had arrived all hours of the day and night. They were sorted neatly into the scream-rattled halls where they would be forced to endure a long misery in their treatment. and Charlie was the one who cleaned them. He scraped away the layers of cooked flesh with a brush and soap. Second-degree burns were the worst of them all. The nerves still twitched in the layers of the burned meat. The only comfort for these patients, those who had lost life and limb to the fire, was morphine. Of all the victims, Charlie related mostly to the children. He recognized the pain hidden inside of them. He had been that child once, hurting and afraid. He knew deep down none of those children could truly be saved. They'd be trapped in their husk bodies as their skin thickened with the pale ropes of scar tissue. Charlie had not escaped his own wounds either. His own burns were beneath the skin. His tragedy lingered in his heart and in his mind, where the charts and statistics could never hope to decipher his fate. St. Barnabas was a horrendous start to Colin's career. He murdered 11 people while he was there. And in 1987, Charles and Adrian moved into a new home in Phillipsburg, New Jersey. By February of 1988, Adrian was pregnant. But Adrian felt isolated, even when Charlie was around. He pursued his RN license shortly after joining the St. Barnabas team, and after that, continued with another program in Keene College. His affections towards Adrian were fleeting. It soon seemed as though Charlie was only interested in the novelty, in the new, and the as of yet obtained. She tried to reassure herself that his distant and frequent pondering was only a consequence of his career. He was regularly bathed in the tides of morality, watching as his patients fought and failed to cling to their lives. Adrian hoped that their child might rekindle an excitement in Charlie. She hoped their daughter might give him something more to feel. And Shauna was born in the fall. So here's Charlie on his way to having a family, and he's still 100% only focused on his job, to the point where he's distant. He's not present even when he's there. So his mind is constantly on go, on we got to accomplish, we got to make things happen. And that's even occurring when he's sitting there stagnant. He's not moving. His mind is still saying, well, we got to do this, 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 and that to get there. And his home life is obviously, taking a hit because of that. But Adrian believed he was proving himself to be a good father. That was until Adrian left him to watch the baby. He left Shauna alone, asleep in her crib, while Colin himself took a walk outside and left the front door ajar. Adrian was ravaged. She was betrayed. She tried to bury her suspicions, wondering if Charlie would dare to dose their daughter with cough medicine to keep her asleep while he left the house. She buried those feelings again when the neighbor's dog was found poisoned in an alley behind their house. Adrian allowed herself to be blind as her husband's profession continued to support their lifestyle. She allowed herself to drift away from Charles. But Charlie, meanwhile, was spending more and more time in their basement. Adrian would learn later that he hid a collection of alcohol down there, and he would spend hours drinking in the dark. Because Charlie felt distant too. The love and attention of his wife no longer served as a substitute for the mother he still missed. Colin needed something else. He needed to do something. Even if that meant everything he worked for will be put on the line. So again, Charlie is, he's obviously dealing with a lot. I mean, his mom meant so much to him, where he tried to replace the feelings that he had for his mother with his wife. And now he has a daughter, and he still somehow can't find that, to the point where when he is left alone with the kid, he's leaving the door open. He's leaving the kid alone. All of these things are very suspicious. What's, why would you do that? Any normal person knows that that's not okay. But then again, we're not talking about a normal person. We're talking about a strange fella. And, like, I get it, man. I get, you know, feeling mournful for a relative that has passed. But do you think that they would want you to do the things that this guy has obviously done? Or do you think that they would want you to get over it, sack up, and go live your life? Because I feel like that's what they'd want. And if you don't have that mentality, of course you're going to fall deeper and deeper into these feelings, into this, you know, reminiscing and depression. And it's only going to get worse. Rather than saying, hey man, they wouldn't want me to be doing this. And if the concept is live your life for them, then certainly understand they wouldn't be like, yeah man, just be sad about me for a long time. Let it destroy you. No. I think they'd be like, hey man, put your shoes on, you know, lace up, and get out there and fucking live. This crying over me bullshit is a little ridiculous. This is 3 years after Charles' earliest confessed killing. Across the intensive, critical, and cardiac care units, codes had started to overlap. And to say some more things here about Charlie, just to throw it in there, is this is not the first killer to work in this fashion, to be working with older people or patients in general, and to have certain things at your disposal to say, okay, here, you know, I just, you know, I did this and that. This is not the first, this is not even the first nurse that was dubbed the Angel of Death, okay? This is not new. I mean, I've never heard of this guy whatsoever. But he has been dubbed not only the Angel of Death, but one of the most prolific killers in American history. IV bags were spiked with insulin. Colin was questioned after the nurses' schedules were cross-referenced with the discovery of the tainted bags. When cornered by the hospital staff, Charles refused to cooperate. You can't prove anything. And they couldn't. Even when police were later approached with the evidence gathered against Charles Cullen, it was cited then as an inconclusive matter to be handled internally by the hospital. In the meantime, more patients died, and then Charles vanished. Charles told Adrian that the hospital had used him as a scapegoat. He claimed that he had spoken out against a looming nurses' strike, thereby they made him a target. When it came time for them to point fingers, Colin was painted as the culprit. So Charles is obviously questioned because, you know, the detectives do the proper work. They do the proper work as to cross-reference who was working when, what side of the hospital they were on, and who would have had access. It's not too difficult. I'm sure this is like police work 101 when you first become some sort of a detective or investigator, right? Cross-reference things, you know? And I would say most hospitals probably have cameras now. But what was it like in 87? I can't be sure. But here's the thing. You're making yourself look even more guilty by just vanishing, right? To vanish after you're being questioned. Like, I mean, obviously you want to get... I guess some people that had nothing to do with some things like this that might be questioned, they might also leave. But it is just so weird knowing this guy, you know, knowing what we know now. You're going to point fingers at him. But then he goes and lies to his wife and says, you know, they pointed fingers at me because of this other reason. But he was hired 2 weeks later at Warren Hospital. It was the only excuse his wife needed to sweep the mystery of the Barnabas deaths under the rug. She said, you know what, $28 an hour, that's some good money. I'm going to take that. You know, even though all these people are dying under random circumstances and it could be my husband, I like the money. If he had been involved with the patient's fatalities, surely another hospital wouldn't hire him. But in December of 1991, her excuse was no longer valid. Charlie failed to hide his alcoholism even as they welcomed their second daughter into the world. Adrian eventually broke into the footlocker Colin had stashed away in the basement. Charlie argued, accused her of violating his privacy, and eventually dropped the subject and retreated yet again to the basement. So here he is, still living a life with all this estrogen around him, and we're under the assumption that he's upset because his mom is gone. But, I mean, he has a wife and two daughters. Do you think that would fill that void? Easily. But he's still drinking. Drinking it away. Drink the pain away. That makes sense, right? That usually helps. People know that that works the best. It's so weird to be in a relationship with anybody and think that you still somehow have some sort of privacy. Especially to that degree, where you have an entire footlocker containing different things, you're just spending all this time away. I don't know. That's too much privacy. But he wanted sympathy from her. He wanted the attention that he had once longed for. He wanted her to give it to him. Even though he's doing these things, he's like, still, coddle me. He realized that his pleas were going unheard. His wife merely navigated around him during those theatrical gestures. He felt more validated in his sadness, in his depression. It took another year before Adrian found the strength to finally divorce him. But during his tenor at the Warren Hospital, Colin went on to kill at least three patients.
I accept that that's what it is.
Do you consider yourself a serial killer?
I guess it depends upon a person's definition. If it's more than one and it's a pattern, I guess, then yes.
In Cullen's case, all of his victims were patients assigned to hospital units where he worked as a nurse.
Charles once again became obsessed, this time with a co-worker named Michelle Tomlinson. Together they would share stories of how they went through depressive moments and experiences in their lives. And his obsession with Michelle was similar to that of Adrian. Unfortunately, this one went a little deeper. He would follow Michelle around the hospital much like a dog on the heel of its owner. He would leave her gifts and treats, and she became overwhelmed, so she pushed away. But he followed her. He would circle her block in the dead of the night and peer through her windows while she slept. Charles actually broke into her house. He watched her from her doorway as she dreamed, and her child dreamed next to her. He eventually turned himself into police before another suicide attempt landed Colin in Greystone Psychiatric Hospital. Colin considered himself happy there. He was tended, he was treated with medication. While still inside, Charles received a call from Warren Hospital. They didn't care that he was currently a resident of an asylum. As long as he was cleared by the physician, they welcomed him back to work. He returned to the night shift, and Charles' divorce was finally finished and he was stripped of his children's custody, even as Charlie demanded, and then passed a polygraph test to prove his sanity. It was the numerous suicide attempts which damned him. And here we are again, talking about Charles, failing. So once, it seems as if like once he finds something that he can, you know, focus his mind on, especially when it comes to another person, and it's not his kids or his first wife, he can put all of his attention into that. But there's so many other things going on, like I said, beneath the surface. I suppose at least he can share these thoughts with Michelle, but then, of course, he gets to be too much. I mean, if he wins her over with simple conversation, why does he go this extra mile? These extra miles. Hey, here's some gifts. Here's some candy. Need me to walk you to your car. All these different things. Just extra stuff that can become, you know, too much. But the best thing is that he notices these things about himself, and he's doing what he can to try to better it. You know, even if he's not with his family or what have you, he is taking the responsibility and saying, hey, I'm going to a psychiatric ward because things aren't going okay upstairs, right? And at this point, he has already killed. He's already killed multiple times. So the story is just beginning to unfold. The other thing you have to wonder is, when does one of these people start to get a sense of what's going on, what he's doing, what he might be doing? I mean, Adrian kind of had an idea. She noticed the dog. She was worried about the kid. So she obviously had something in her mind that said, hey, he might do something. He might have some ominous things going on. Now, was she aware that he was killing? I don't know. I mean, killing a dog is one thing. We all hear about the stories of the loud dog in the neighborhood that eventually disappears. Now, can you guarantee that it was him? I don't know. But the fact that it was poisoned, so many questions are looming, right? But here we are.
It was a pattern that began 26 years ago at St. Barnabas Medical Center in Livingston, New Jersey, Colin's very first nursing job.
I worked on the burn unit, so, I mean, there was a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. And I didn't cope with that as well as I thought I would.
And that was the first place that you gave someone medication that caused them to die.
The treatment he received at the Greystone Psychiatric didn't help him. He went on to kill Miss Helen Dean in September of 1993 after injecting her with digoxin. He also killed Jesse Eichen in Hutterdon Hospital on July 9th, 1996. Four others were killed as well. In 1998, Liberty Nursing and Rehabilitation Center of Allentown, Pennsylvania, Francis Henry, who was an old man with a broken vertebrae, died after being injected with a syringe of insulin. In January of 99, it was Ottmar Schramm, and digoxin was to blame again. That was Easton, Pennsylvania, Matthew Mattern in 1999, Stella Danielzyk in 2000, this is Lee Valley Hospital. The list of names grew longer as Charles turned hospitals into hunting grounds. He killed numerous patients between New Jersey and Pennsylvania. He took his fill and moved on to the next horde of hopeless victims. Charles was caught stealing drugs and disposing of others improperly. His dangerous and very strange behavior was already linked to a handful of St. Luke's fatalities. An administrative meeting offered Cullen the opportunity to resign. He did. He wouldn't admit to killing the five patients until years later. Cullen was then hired by Somerset Medical Center in September of 2002. Now, the guy's able to somehow go from place to place. He's able to go from one hospital to the next and pretty much do the same thing. And I was under the assumption, much like the other nurses that have been considered angels of death, that they were simply killing old people. Now, Colin started out in the burn unit, so obviously a lot of pain and suffering there. But then he's just killing people with, you know, a broken neck or just random things and doing it with this digoxin, D-I-G-O-X-I-N. I've not heard of this before. I don't know why I would have. Outside of just true crimes in general, I don't hear of this being used. I definitely hear of insulin. So here again, we have an angel of death, but this one is killing people from the age of 21 and on. And there's no explanation as to why. There's no real explanation. He had a wife, two daughters. He had something there to care about, to want to be with, to make himself happy for. You know what I mean? There's so many things. It doesn't make any sense. It's indecipherable, truly. In July, after Charlie had tried and failed to kill Philip Greger, the New Jersey Poison Information and Education System warned Somerset that their recent pattern of overdoses indicated that someone might be murdering their patients. Now, what a crazy thing to have come across your computer. You know, you just get an email from people that, you know, you work under for sure. And they're like, hey man, you guys have been having a strange amount of overdoses, like an odd amount, like way too many. To the point where it seems like, you know, people are being killed. So you want to check into that? Like, that's got to be horrifying. But there were so many other victims. I mean, like I said, ranging from the age of 21 to 69. I mean, it went on for so long to the point where Somerset Medical Center failed to contact authorities until October. And finally, homicide detectives Dan Baldwin and Tim Braun spearheaded the investigation into Somerset. After expressing their frustration with the hospital, who had failed to act on so many levels regarding Charles Cullen, a thorough dig into his employment history finally unveiled the roles that he might have played in so many other mysterious deaths. By the end of October, Charlie was fired for lying on his job application. He very likely would have vanished again, and his crimes would have been allowed to continue. However, Amy, who had been open and accepting enough early on to befriend Charles Cullen, provided detectives with the information they needed to solidify their case. She shared what she knew of his behavior, the logs in the hospital computers, and Charlie's inexplainable links with so many dead patients. She spoke with Cullen after hours, and a wire was worn beneath her blouse. So these are the things, like, in the beginning I had mentioned how hospitals typically had cameras, or do have cameras today, and here this guy is somehow getting away with murder in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. It's like, hey man, you know that there's all of this whole thing is meant for that not to happen. The idea of the hospital is to save as many lives as possible. And when this guy is simply taking them, and there's no, it's not necessary whatsoever, you got to think that there's got to be footage, there's got to be evidence, and here this woman is putting herself on the line. I mean, what is he going to do? He's got to wait till she falls asleep or something to inject her with insulin. So wearing a wire probably wasn't that stressful. But at the same time, there is a risk. There is a risk. But she's willing to do it. And that's the good thing. That's the benefit, is somebody was willing to be close enough and willing to get the information from him, essentially. Charles was arrested in December of 2003 for one count of murder and one count of attempted murder. The one count was Reverend Florian Gall, who had arrived in Somerset 9 months after Charlie's employment. He had a 3-digit fever and swollen lymph nodes. His breathing was labored, his kidneys were on the brink of failing. Despite those circumstances, Gall improved. The Reverend died unexpectedly on June 28th. His digoxin levels, a drug once prescribed to Florian but since discontinued, were alarmingly and artificially high. Colin pled guilty to killing at least 13 patients by lethal injection at Somerset. He pled guilty to 3 others scattered around New Jersey and 6 more in Allentown. During the court proceedings, he continued to fight for the attention that he had so clearly longed for throughout his life. He taunted the judge until he was restrained. He continued, even through the cloth and duct tape because he had been gagged. In March of 2006, he was sentenced to 18 consecutive life sentences. And the hospitals where Colin was employed were all sued by families of his victims, where they settled out of court. And less than a year after his arrest, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and 35 other states began implementing stricter and more honest means of reporting and monitoring the job performance of hospital staff. Charles Colin was the first serial killer to be interviewed on 60 Minutes. None of the programs succeeded where the police investigation had failed. Charles may have been searching for love by his mother, thereby stripping families of their own loved ones. He may have been enacting his vengeance upon the hospitals themselves, as they had stolen his mother from him all those years ago by cremating her. He may have been simply enjoying watching as the lethal injection slinked through the needle into the vein of the unsuspecting. Nobody has any idea. Charles Colin remains in the New Jersey State Prison, behind the iron bars, where he should be. It's just unfortunate that so many had to die because of whatever the fuck was wrong with him. And there was almost no stopping it. I mean, how could you save somebody's life when they're injected with something that you didn't know? I mean, that's horrifying. And then also to think that there's so many out there that don't have any idea that this is how their loved one might have been killed or might have died. You know, you send your aunt to the hospital. She's there for 2 weeks and unexpectedly dies. She went there because she had a swollen ankle, right? But you don't get a chance to look into it, especially if the families don't have the money to look into it. They can't go and exhume a body. No one's going to pay to exhume a body. The investigators would have to do that. The state would probably have to do that specifically in this case because there are so many that are in the ground already that might have been killed by him. And it was just written off as something else.
At St. Barnabas, they could have had my license investigated and probably revoked at that point in time.
Should they have?
Should they have, yes.
But instead of ending Charles Cullen's nursing career, St. Barnabas marked the beginning of a 16-year killing spree. Cullen would work at 8 other hospitals and be suspected of harming patients at 6 of them.
So it's pretty obvious when you listen to him that he is a small man. He is very frail. He seems weak. And of course, he used this method to kill all the people that he killed. And what is he probably like in prison? You know, he's probably manhandled. You know, he's tossed around. And good on ya.
Why did you like Ditch?
Ditch, was a very powerful cardiac medication.
What does it do to someone?
In small amounts, it slows the heart rate down. In larger amounts, it can cause what's called complete heart block. And then the heart is very irregular. And, you know, it can cause death. It does cause death in large amounts.
But that has been Charles Colin, and this has been American Crimes, Livingston, New Jersey. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the Patreon if you'd like to get this episode a few days earlier. Otherwise, enjoy it when it comes out on all of the podcast players. Be sure to subscribe. When new episodes come, you'll be first to know. But if you're on Patreon, you'll be even firster to know. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Until next time, my name's Patrick. That's American Crimes. That's a crazy case. Until next time, bye-bye.